Folkhouse.com, Composer Interviews. We're here today with Mr. Robert Folk. Mr. Folk, thank you for joining us.
Nice to hear from you, Tom. My pleasure to be here with you today.
Let's begin by discussing your upcoming project, the music for the film Vivaldi. What stage of production is it in, and how enthused are you to be involved with this movie?
I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be a great project for all of us. Right now, we are in pre-production on the film. We're fully cast. We have Joseph Fiennes as Vivaldi. We've also got Gerard Depardieu has a featured role in the film. Lena Headey, Zuleika Robinson, and also Elle Fanning, who is Dakota Fanning's younger sister. Also, Malcolm McDowell is on board. So we've got a ways to go, but we're hoping to be shooting probably in May or June in Venice and Vienna.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful cast is in line for this one.
Yeah, we got a great cast, and it's a really strong script which focuses mostly on Vivaldi's time in Venice, which is where he spent most of his life. And he's quite a colorful character, as you probably know, just from music history over the years. He was a very prolific composer, a virtuoso violinist. He was born into a musical family, and as a young man became a priest in Venice, although he was always at odds with the church. He was quite a rebellious character, and he spent much of his time also teaching in a orphanage in Venice, mostly young girls who were the offspring of Venice royalty. So to put Vivaldi in this environment with his sort of rebellious nature sets up quite an interesting story for the movie.
It sounds like there's quite a bit the average viewer will learn from it as well, because a lot of people associate with Vivaldi, of course, with the classical music that they've known over the years.
Yes, yes. Our plan is we're going to use some of the premier recordings that are available to us now of Vivaldi's music. I'm also going to be conducting new performances of select pieces by Vivaldi. And then, of course, I'm going to write an original score which will tie all these elements together and add the needed atmosphere, pacing, character development, all the things that writing a very specific score can do so much better than simply tracking music, even though obviously Vivaldi's music is wonderful, wonderful music. We can always be a little more specific with an original score. So that's sort of the plan at the moment, and I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, yeah, it sounds like it's going to be a wonderful musical package that will be generated from the film.
Yeah, it should be very strong. We have plans to record in London with one of the big orchestras there. And Virgin is interested in the soundtrack rights, although we've not made a final commitment to any one company yet. They're very interested, and I think there have been conversations with Sony Classical as well, so I think it'll be a very good soundtrack.
Superb.
Yeah.
Going back in time a bit, I'd like to take a moment to reflect on your past work, starting with one soundtrack in particular, Beastmaster 2.
Mm-hmm.
Your score for this film is recognized as a fan favorite in the soundtrack community and always stirs up enthusiasm whenever it's brought up. What is it about this particular score that you think has helped maintain such longevity with the listeners?
You know, I'm not quite sure. You know, maybe part of it is just the movie itself, you know, the original Beastmaster and the one that I did, which was the second film. You know, those are pretty quirky, interesting, kind of offbeat movies in their own little way. And, you know, made for not a whole lot of money. And then, of course, the score was written in a very short amount of time, recorded in East Berlin with a not so thrilling orchestra. You know, the orchestra was very challenged by this score, and so I think, you know, maybe you throw all that together and you've got a score that was created in a very sort of hyper kinetic fashion, with a tremendous amount of energy there. It's not the greatest recording in the world, as probably any fan might tell you, but certainly there's a lot of energy there. And I remember being at war a little bit with the orchestra. I think it was the East Berlin Radio Orchestra, I believe. And they were constantly arguing with me about, you know, this music is too hard to play, it's too difficult, which really was not the case. I mean, it was an action score, and then, of course, it had its sort of primitive elements to it. But for some reason, they were overwhelmed a little bit, and, you know, we just had to keep pushing to get the recording to a level that was releasable on CD. And I think we did that, but it's a little bit rough if you go back and listen to it now. But as to why it's a fan favorite, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, it sounds like you rocked the world a little bit over there during the recording sessions.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I was put in touch with the orchestra through Michael Kamen, and I know he had recorded several scores over there with that orchestra before I went. And he said, look, you know, they're good, they'll try their best, but, you know, they do have their limitations, mostly due to sight reading factors. I mean, I'm sure if they were playing Beethoven or Brahms or something from the classical repertoire, I'm sure it would be very solid. But with a lot of orchestras that make an attempt at recording film music, you know, once you get outside of London and L.A. and some of the big cities, you always run into that factor with, you know, how quickly can they learn it? And that seems to be the big obstacle. So Michael's caution was, you know, do the best you can. He said, to be honest with you, when I've used them, I've often had to go back to London and re-record some of that music just to get it done. Of course, I didn't have that luxury on the Beastmaster, but it's still a fun score and one that I look back on with love and affection, you know?
Where would you rank that effort in correlation with some of your other favorite works, such as Neverending Story 2 and Lawnmower Man?
You know, Neverending Story 2 is a favorite of mine, as is Lawnmower Man. You know, in a way, they have some similarities in that you have the fantasy element, and you have a little bit of the science fiction element in all three of those movies to a greater or lesser degree. But that always makes for great writing. You know, I think you have a lot more freedom to step out in front of the story in those genres. You tend to be able to write bigger, grander, more epic, more virtuoso type of filmic score writing with those kind of movies. So, you know, they are linked in a way. Neverending Story 2 was recorded in with the Munich Opera Orchestra primarily. Then we later, after editing the film a little bit, we later did some pickup sessions in Berlin. And one interesting part of that trip was that it was at the time that the wall was coming down. And that made for an interesting time in Berlin. Just a lot of Germans running around, hysterically crazy and whatnot, you know. And that did flow into the orchestra's attitude there. We got some really good performances. Lawnmower Man was recorded in London with the London Symphonia, a very excellent orchestra and one that's done a lot of film recording. So I think when you listen to that particular recording, you're going to find it's much more solid than anything I've ever done in Germany, as you would find with any London-based recording. And you can really put anything in front of those players, and it's going to come back to you, you know, in superb condition, and you know, for that reason, that's one of my favorite CDs.
Stepping over to the comedy genre, do you have any memories you can share with us from the days of Ace Ventura 2, which was really the movie series that turned out to be Jim Carrey's first cinematic breakthrough?
Ace Ventura 2, it was really one of my most fun experiences so far in writing and recording for film. Probably just because it was a fusion score using, you know, a big 90-piece orchestra, an African male choir. You had sort of these spy theme elements superimposed, you know, over all this orchestral writing. So it was really a lot of fun stylistically. Also, you know, whenever you're recording in Los Angeles, you're gonna get a phenomenal recording, and that one is no exception. When you have you know, a big symphonic orchestra like that, and as well as some of the best percussion and rhythm players in the world living right here in Los Angeles, that was absolutely a pleasure to work on. Jim Carrey, I had a chance to meet him on several occasions. As you might expect, just always on, always the funny guy, and a real pleasure to be with. He also had a lot of musical ideas, just a terrific guy to work with. It was also my first project with writer-director Steve Odekirk, who I've done several films with over the years, and he's a tremendous joy to work with, a very, very funny man that came out of stand-up comedy, and, you know, I think one of the funniest guys writing and directing today. So that was, you know, one of my very favorite projects. I'm really proud of it.
How interesting of an evolution is it for you to work on movies as varied as Beastmaster 2, Ace Ventura 2, Miles from Home, and soon the upcoming Vivaldi?
Well, you're covering a tremendous range of styles. You know, even inherent in the titles themselves, that would be pretty evident. Miles from Home is one of my top five favorite experiences of all time. It's one of my favorite genres, which is the dramatic film with romantic overtones. It had a great cast in Richard Gere, Kevin Anderson, John Malkovich had a role in the film, Judith Ivy, directed by Gary Sinise, who by the way, is a phenomenal director. I wish that he were not so busy as an actor, just so we could see some more movie making from him. And it was a fun time. We all got to go to the Cannes Film Festival, where the film was in competition. And Gary and I, we decided to write a big Americana score for the movie. We took it to the festival. There was a big standing ovation for the movie that went on for about 6 to 8 minutes, I would say. It just went on and on and on. Got a lot of attention there. And we were feeling on top of the world, and in typical Hollywood fashion, I remember sitting out in front of the Martinez Hotel there at about 4 or 5 in the morning, the next morning, waiting for all the reviews to come in, and two or three big reviewers in the United States just did not like the movie very much. So, consequently, we headed right back to Los Angeles. The executives that were in charge of the movie recut the movie, took out a lot of the music, had me rewrite a lot of sequences in a more intimate fashion. So the final film, it's not what the film originally was. It's not what Gary originally tried to make. The score did not survive as well as I would have liked it to have done. But still a great experience, a fun movie. And to answer your question, you know, just having touched on Miles from Home a little bit, you know, Beastmaster, Ace Ventura, Miles from Home, Vivaldi, I think it's what makes film work kind of exciting, is that you've got all those different arenas to play in. And for myself, you know, I originally was a rocker as a kid. Then having done a doctorate and teaching at Juilliard School and covering a lot of other music arenas in between, and also since then. I kind of look forward to changing it up and doing a lot of different kind of writing, and fortunately I've been able to do that so far.
It's wonderful. And the one thing that strikes me about the Miles From Home references is, wow, the power of the critic.
The power of the critic.
Wow.
It just underscores once again that composers really do not have any control whatsoever about what ends up in that final movie. And it also sheds light from behind the scenes on the fact that it is such a collaborative business that in some situations, even the critics have the last word, which is kind of sad in a way, but it's just the way that the business is.
It's unfortunate. In a lot of ways, it's operating out of being fearful.
It's true. Absolutely true. There's that fear out there that, oh, gee, we got some bad reviews. You know, maybe they've got a point here or there. Maybe we should actually amend our own movie that we love so much just to the liking of the New York Times or some other vehicle. You know, it's industry-wide. It's not just the press. It happens, you know, right from the head of studios on down to the last guy on the movie, the composer. Or in that case, the last guy in the movie, I guess, was the critic.
Yeah, I suppose so, in that odd chain of events.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, how do you think some of the masters would have fared at film composing? Like, let's take Vivaldi, for instance. How do you think some of those individuals from back then would have embraced the art of making movies?
Well, you know, there have been a lot of concert composers over the years that have done a lot of film writing, you know, since film has existed. A composer like Vivaldi probably would have had, you know, maybe mixed results because of his rebelliousness in life. Certainly, he has amazing technique, amazing ideas, brilliant writing. In that sense, he'd be perfect as a film composer because he was so fast, you know, so quick with his facility. That would have served him well. The ability to work for somebody or to work for a bunch of producers and a director and a studio at the same time, that might not have been his forte.
Now, we touched on the earlier in the conversation a CD release for Vivaldi. Aside from that, to the listeners out there, are there any special CD selections of your work that you could recommend?
Right now, I haven't had anything out there recently. Most of the CDs that are out there, people are very well aware of. So I can't really recommend anything right away. There are a couple of things I'd like to see come out on CD. I get calls all the time about Police Academy, you know, with all those seven scores. I think if you put together the best hour from all those seven scores, that would make a great CD. I'm sure it'll happen at some point. But all those scores were recorded in Los Angeles. They're expensive because of all the union rates involved and whatnot. But I'm hoping that'll come to light. Maybe a deal could be struck with Warner Brothers and the union to put something like that out. I also get calls to put out a more complete version of the Never Ending Story score of mine. That would be something I'd look forward to. Other than that, the only thing that I've got that wasn't put out on CD that I'd like to see come out was a very small British film entitled You're Dead, which it's one of my favorite scores. You can get a little bit of a sampling from that score when you go to my website, robertfulk.com. As the intro page opens up, you'll hear one of the selections from You're Dead, which is featured there on the website. But other than that, I'm looking forward to the Vivaldi soundtrack getting out there into the marketplace.
Indeed. And would you happen to have a rough estimate of when that'll take place?
It's hard to know. I think we'll probably be in post-production by the end of the year. And so, you know, it's got to be sometime in, I'd say, in the first two quarters of 2008, I would think.
Well, something to definitely look forward to, and I want to thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. It was very interesting to chat with you.
My pleasure, Tom. I hope that hope it goes out streaming worldwide through the airwaves, and hello to all the fans.
Yeah, we'll try to get a streaming over to the German audience as well.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Okay, Tom, thank you.